We have spoken about the fact that there's a trend of experienced founders coming. We have seen some of these founders, whether it's Bhavesh, Deepi, Harshal, and all of these guys at Razorpay. We have seen Swiggy, bunch of them, right? How they have grown. So then we spoke about infinity founders. So we went from first time to experience to infinity. These all coexist. New are coming in each of them. And now we have started seeing the trend, in my view, which is digital industrialists. People are actually starting to think, wait, I am here, I am early, I have built a very good successful business. I think either they are adjacencies, sometimes they are not adjacencies, but there's some right to play, right to win, which we'll come to, that I think I can do more. And we will come to the instinctive used to be, no, you know, you have to do one. But I think that's what a digital industry is. It's the infinity entrepreneur taking a step back and thinking what there is a lot more to do.
Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. Avnish, fantastic to do this with you again. I'm very excited about today's discussion on digital industrialists. So to start with, we've spoken about experienced founders, and you know, we had the discussion about Anurag and the one card journey at one point. Then we spoke about infinity entrepreneurs. And now it seems like we have one more new term to add to our lingo, which is digital industrialists. So tell me a little bit about how this is kind of playing out. Like, our lingo seems to be expanding even faster than our portfolio and frankly the market.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Well, we are the, what do they say, largest, fastest growing large economy in the world. So we are also growing. We have to keep pace with some of this. But actually, I know you're putting it on me, but the word came from you. So do you remember what context you had brought this up in?
Vaguely, yeah. But but I think we were having some conversations with later stage investors, including some public market investors.
Yeah.
And they were actually, you know, pushing back saying, you know, hey, some of these digital companies, you know, founders seem to be getting into multiple businesses.
Yeah.
You know, how do we think about that? And frankly, it kind of flipped a switch for me saying, you know, they're investing in these companies.
They don't ask that question of Reliance, Birla, Tata.
Yeah, exactly.
But why is digital held to a different standard?
Exactly. Why is digital held to a different standard? Yeah, and so that kind of sparked the thought.
Yeah. No, so look, fantastic to be back. Very excited about this topic. We are in every possible way, I guess it's known to everyone, we think about founders a lot. We also think of markets. It's our job. But we think about founders a lot. You know, the digital world, actually, again, to set context, Rajinder, why don't we do our usual digital evangelizing? How big is this going to be? Where are we today? Where are we headed?
Line of sight, I think India digital today is ballpark 120 to 150 billion.
And clearly, what line of sight by that? What does India digital
mean? India digital means number mean? Your, you know, classic internet, software.
Yeah. So these are valuation of 120.
Cumulative across all large companies at Flipkart, PhonePe, Ola.
Implied value of Google, some of these also probably.
Maybe. Yeah. I hadn't thought of. But definitely the India
you know,
startup
Google
universe
has billion, 2 billion of revenue in India. So
sure.
Probably.
Yeah. Sure, you could add that them as well. I think we've spoken about it internally. We think that number is somewhere in the 2 trillion, 1.5 to 2 trillion, probably 2 trillion range a decade out. And the back of the envelope math on that is also fairly clear. If you look at digital today as a percentage of total market cap in the US, that's 50 to 60%.
Yeah.
If you look at China, that number is 35 to 40%. Why will India be any different a decade
out? So we would call it up to 2 trillion of market cap coming. You know, my view is more optimistic. I think it may be larger. The fact that this is, and one thing we've spoken about a lot, is also that this is being built digital first. We talk about our digital public infrastructure now with all the things we all know, UPI, GST, everything, right? So large market cap coming. The reality is that we are going to go from a cottage industry, which nobody cared about. And often it gets covered in a light, which is not necessarily, you know, flattering. Like the same yardstick is not applied. I was just reading this morning or yesterday, you know, unicorns have their comeuppance and, you know, valuations have been crashing because of poor performance. When the stock market goes down, people say, oh, multiples have contracted, not that the companies are performing poorly. So the point is, I think we are in the middle of building an industry where when it becomes 20-30% of the GDP, whether by value or by various measures, you have to start thinking about How do we look at this world of traditional GDP and how do we look at this world of digital GDP? And we look at the traditional world with industrialists, right? So the good news is, whatever you walk through various phases of our podcast or various, but what are the phases of entrepreneur we have seen? We spoke about inexperienced founders. They have created tremendous value. The most valuable companies today in India and digital are actually created by first-time founders. So yeah. Let's not call them inexperienced. The fearless first-time founders, right? We have spoken about the fact that there's a trend of experienced founders coming. We have seen some of these founders, whether it's Bhavesh, Deepi, Harshal, and all of these guys at RazorPay. We have seen Swiggy, bunch of them, right? How they have grown, Ashish at Off Business. So then we spoke about infinity founders. So we went from first time to experience to infinity. These all coexist. New are coming in each of them. And now we have started seeing the trend, in my view, which is digital industrialists. People are actually starting to think, wait, I am here, I am early, I've built a very good successful business. I think either they are adjacency, sometimes they are not adjacencies, but there's some right to play, right to win, which we'll come to. That I think I can do more. And we will come to the instinctive used to be, no, you know, you have to do one. But I think that's what a digital industrialist is. It's the infinity entrepreneur taking a step back and thinking what there is a lot more to do. And I know you will probably cover some of these global examples, but this is not new.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we mean. Good
point. I think the founder, I wouldn't say quality, but just overall founder mindset has significantly evolved as well. And that's something that, you know, you actually had covered as well, which is every cycle we're seeing the quality of thought thinking, quality of execution, quality of ideas just continuously improving. So whether it's first time founders, whether it's experienced founders, whether it's infinity founders and going forward even with digital industrialists.
Yeah.
The journey at every stage seems to be kind of with better quality, more with depth of market going up, there's certainly more opportunity.
And also, I would say one of the mindset shifts specifically with Infinity Founders, and just to try to put a little bit more framework around it, is we have all seen 15, 16, 10 plus, 12, 15, whatever years of a tough journey on digital. So it was about surviving. Now digital is here. India is here. We're talking about where India is going to a 10 trillion economy. So now it is about thriving. And then when you say, okay, up to 2 trillion of market cap is coming, why should this founder is now saying the infinity founder has tasted blood with success. And so they are saying, why I want to capture a lot more of it. I can't, maybe the market I'm playing in is limited. Maybe the profit pool is limited. Something is limited. Why should I just limit myself to this? And I think that's where our mindset also needs to flip to say that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are global examples, which I'm sure you can...
No, I know. I think the infinity founder especially is certainly asking what after infinity.
Yes. So,
yes. Makes sense. I think, you know, one thought, you know, I was crunching some numbers and I looked and there are almost 1,000 listed tech companies globally, like software, internet, cloud. There are almost 1,000 and cumulatively they total to about 23 trillion market cap. And then the next data point was where the penny dropped. Top seven, which is the Magnificent Seven. Guess what percentage of that 23 trillion they constitute?
I don't want to think that it'll make me sad.
But it's 50%. It's 49%.
I thought it'd be more. Okay.
Seven 50. Companies are 50% of 23 trillion.
Yeah.
And we know the seven. It's, you know, Amazon, it's Facebook, it's Google,
Microsoft.
You know, we know
Apple,
all of them.
Yeah.
But if you go into each of them and then you think, you know, the way they built their business, so between Jobs and Cook, they've got devices, they've got iPhone, they've got wearables, they've got cloud, they've got content, they've got payments. Like, this is just very, very different businesses built into one.
Yeah.
Now, then some of them have built it, you know, within one company. Then there's the examples like Musk, where he's Tesla, SpaceX, Boring Company, Twitter.
Yeah.
And so you have all of these founders who are, you know, these Magnificent Seven founders who've gone on to build incredibly large companies. And so there's clearly a path after infinity and there's a lot to learn from.
Yeah, and multiple businesses are embedded in them, like you just said. But even if you look at Microsoft, well, Amazon is well known. AWS is a completely different business. And we'll come to how different approaches, but Microsoft acquired LinkedIn also, right? And they've been acquiring, they've been making some very big acquisitions. So absolutely.
The opportunity sounds very exciting. Let's flip to the reason to not do it. And it just feels like it's a, or at least we've heard that it's a first principles violation of everything that you've learned in building a startup, investing in a startup, anything that, you know, founders and VCs and investors have kind of been taught through this first generation of, you know, internet in India is now a playbook that we are saying revisit. Why? Yeah.
And this is where, you know, if it wasn't breaking rules, then everybody would do it, right? And if you look at back again, going back to history, John D. Rockefeller, you know, U.S. Steel. Like if you look at the most, or J.P. Morgan, you look at the most storied business people in the world. It's always been people who have built conglomerates. So like I said, first, let's go back in history globally. Let's go back in the present in India. This is normal. Now you've also given examples of why it's normal even in digital in the US. I will tell you, even in the US over the last 20 years, I have seen the narrative change from being one of the companies, markets, whatever, to founder-led companies and how. So I think the view is now much more founder backwards. You know, what is the ability of this person? If you look at when Elon Musk bought out Twitter, a lot of the VCs have put in money in that, right? So I think this is now normal. I think what we are trying to do here is actually sharing our point of view that we think it is normal even here, but I agree with you. I expect to actually hear from people that what are you guys talking about here, because this is a violation of first principles. I think as a venture capitalist, what is our job? Our job, in addition to backing innovation, is to create value for our investors. I think this is a better path for creating value. Is a tried and tested entrepreneur. Now, we will talk about rite of passage, what do they need to do to get there. But assuming they have built a successful business where they have created value, if they are building multiple successful businesses and you're getting an opportunity to invest in that, you are stacking odds in your favor and therefore creating better returns for your investors. Now, whether how those teams should be built, all of that, that's first the conceptual buy-in. To me, this is better for VC investing. You know, once it came up, even in our internal team meeting, where people said, hey, you know, this, because we've tasted success yeah. with Ashish at Off Business and Oxyzo. We've tasted success. We've had the privilege with Bhavish in Ola Electric. And I remember in one of the meetings, people said, why don't we just replicate this model? It's not that easy, because again, there's a rite of passage. But I actually think it's better for, this is, again, this will be 20% of the playbook. But so far, people just by definition assume it should be 0%.
Yeah.
So 20% of this playbook, this is a good playbook for the VCs. I think it's really better for the founders, because what you also find, look, I sold my company, right? I sold because I also wanted to do something else. At that time, the opportunity wasn't there, the thinking wasn't there. But for a founder who loves the 0 to 10 journey, in the perfect world, they would create value, maybe 0 to infinity type of journey, hand over one business where a professional team is running and keep creating new and new. And like I said, it's great for the founder because then they can keep doing it for the lifelong. It's great for the VC, but you know, there are other constituents. So what do you think?
No, actually on the other constituents also, like, I honestly think it's a win-win-win, because if you think of capital allocation, the biggest question is if you're entering a new business as a infinity entrepreneur or as a mature company, should you be allocating more capital to this new business? Should you be optimizing profitability on your existing businesses?
Yeah.
What do shareholders want? So even for a later stage investor or a public investor in a company, I can perfectly well understand the argument. If you're entering a new line of business, it might just well be the right answer that you capitalize that business afresh.
Yeah.
And set it up with a, you know, cap table, where of course there are different ways of, you know, incentivizing existing shareholders, in which we can come to. You've spoken about this rite of passage and right to win a couple of times. Are we saying that all founders should start thinking about being digital industrialists? When should they start, like,
they
should
can
founders
think,
start multiple businesses?
They can think, but they shouldn't do it. So, no. I actually think I just want to be very careful with what we are saying here. This is more likely to fail than succeed. Okay, so I think that therefore there have to be serious guardrails. A lot of value has been lost by doing random acquisitions, M&A, 80, what is that number? 85 to 90% fails, unrelated diversification of businesses. All of this that we are talking about somewhere falls in that realm, okay? So this fails 85 to 90% of the time. That should be the understanding. Now, where can it succeed, and when it can succeed, it can create a lot of value. I think there have to be a number of guardrails. The first guardrail is, have you created infinity journey or value in the business you are in? Do you have a highly profitable business? If you look at conglomerates' history in the world, And by the way, including Reliance, it is always that they have a cash cow business, crazy cash generation business. They don't know what to do with the cash. And therefore, they have to find other businesses to invest in. Or you can return, you know, in the US, companies like Apple had been doing a lot of share buybacks, right? In that context, by the way, if you look at what happened with Facebook when they did Meta, I think they, I may be getting the number wrong, but somewhere in the range of billions of dollars was invested in Meta, and stock just tanked. And it was a highly cash flow generating business. And in the last 6 months, the narrative has completely changed.
The moment they said
they stopped and all of that. So Meta, I think, and they obviously changed their name also. Now, by the way, same thing happened with Google and Alphabet, right? So this can go wrong a lot. You have to have an absolute cash generation machine. Getting to that cash generation machine is the rite of passage for the founder to become an Infinity founder and to start thinking about being a digital industrialist, okay? And I think that's very key. When they have reached that stage, a number of muscles have been built, which I think will set them up very well for the next stage of the journey. But until that point, those muscles are not in place. And I'll give you one, you know, I had this debate with a founder who was saying, look, I'm almost break even and highly profitable are very different things, or consistently profitable are very different things. So again, the muscle, it teaches you how you manage the business. Now, what are the other pieces of it? I think in order to ultimately, we have that classic Adam Smith thing, right? Resources are land, labor and capital. The founder has to, in our world, digital world, land tends to be product, some kind of a 10x, IP, whatever. The founder has to be an infinite resource generation machine. Otherwise, they will get taken down in trying to do these things, and then the core business will also fail. So human capital, labor, capital, you know, actual capital. A founder knows, or my view is, they should know that they are able to do this thing when they are getting signals that there are so many talented people who want to join me, but I don't know what to do with them. And there's so much money that I could actually potentially deploy and allocate correctly or well, but I don't have it. So that to me, these are the qualifying criteria. Beyond that, like I said before, lots of failure have happened. So what is the founder should have a true introspective view that ultimately their bandwidth is limited. People like Elon Musk, someone like some of them in our portfolio seem to have an infinite bandwidth, right? They'll sleep in the office even now. But are they really ready to hand over? Because you can't be 0 to 1 in multiple businesses. You can be 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity, infinity plus. Your different businesses should be at different stages. And you should be on the 0 to 1, 1 to 10 if that's... Are you ready to let go and hand over the rest? Finally, do you have a key good strategic insight that you're deriving from your existing business that is giving you a right to play and a right to win in this new business? So I think it's, like I said, I don't want this to come across as this is the right answer for everybody. I think lots of guardrails and filters, but if it works and when it works, it's tremendously value creating, like we have seen.
Yeah. No, I think the another kind of insight that I was thinking of was at least with the old economy or traditional businesses, the way they thought about expansion was more diversification, not, so you have oil to consumer or whatever it's called, you have retail, you have telecom, you have financial services. These are actually very diverse businesses. And it's not necessarily true that each feed off each other. They're just built more from a diversification standpoint. And Tata is very similar, hotels, steel, like very unrelated but diverse businesses. And the General Electrics of the world also built in a similar way. It seems like in digital, people are doing it in a very different way. So the playbook seems to be that you expand, but you expand into areas which actually strengthen the core.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a much more interesting playbook for expansion. So
I didn't think of it like that, but that's probably true because of also the fact that this is technology. So you can actually stitch these things together, which you may not be able to.
And I think Amazon actually showed the way in many ways.
Yeah.
Bezos, like first, of course, retail. Then from retail, there was cloud. Cloud actually reduced their own, initially it was set up because it reduced their own server costs.
They were going to go bankrupt.
Then they realized that, we can externalize this.
Yeah.
Then they realized, this is a business on its own. Then they created retail because retail created, fresh supply. Then they created, of course, content and, Prime because that, again, created loyalty and stickiness with the core.
Then their own brands.
And so you can see how each of the expansion actually strengthened the core in closer to home. Off business expanded into Oxiso. Oxiso clearly, you know, from a supply chain finance standpoint, strengthens the core. Ola Electric, EVs will absolutely one day strengthen the core of ride sharing. And then, of course, the core itself may keep evolving. But all of these businesses actually strengthen the core. And I think therein lies the reason.
So that's definitely one framework. But let's think of the Reliance framework. What as the refinery, as the core Reliance business, what was the core thing that they brought to any new business?
See, with refining, they brought scale.
And they knew massive execution at massive scale, they knew.
And because of the scale, they understood how to lower costs.
Excellent.
Then they basically crazy cash converted flow. The two into crazy cash flow.
No, so massive scale, low cost, crazy cash flow. What did they go and do? Disrupted India's largest growing industry at the time, mobile, because it needed these three things.
Correct.
Right? So it has to be like a Lego block, right? Now, I think that, so what you are saying is that Lego block could be core business, should be maybe in digital core business. Mm. But I'm saying it doesn't necessarily have to be that defined, because in Reliance's case, when you look back and say what were the three pillars and which industry does it disrupt, it worked, right? Without necessarily stitching them together.
Capabilities are what takes you to the new business.
I don't know. I'm just saying, but I think that's another framework that when you're thinking massive, like if you look at Ola Electric, we are doing batteries also, right? Batteries, whatever we have done in manufacturing in electric, is that manufacturing at scale is a skill set for battery. But battery, the core capability of research is very different. It's more complex, right? And of course, in our case, and which we had discussed in moats, as an ultimate moat is the ambition and the culture, right? The founder moat.
So. No, that of course, and I also think in digital at least, and maybe it's also true for some of the Reliance examples you've related, these are also at the cutting edge of innovation. And innovation and being that far ahead on product is also a moat, because it's harder to replicate. Even after all the learning, it's not, I at least have not seen similar B2B commerce companies like an Off Business replicate the success that Off Business has seen in Oxiso, because there is not only a capability, but also they're just so innovative on, you know, what they do in the fintech realm.
Similarly
with, you know, Ola Electric.
Actually, it's an interesting point. I think in the digital world, maybe one of the filters they should have, the quote-unquote digital industrialists, are you doing something that is innovative? And therefore, some moat is around that, right? And it could come from your core business, because otherwise you'll go against some incumbent who's got
better data, better.
Yeah.
Some of the examples we started out with at the start of the podcast, the playbook of conglomeration and what structure they've kind of chosen to set these companies up is slightly different. Some have done it in one, some have done in organic, some have done in inorganic, some have done in separate companies. How should a founder think about it?
Yeah, you know, I don't have a good answer, because we started off talking about Apple's examples that you were giving. Then you look at what Ola has done. Now, in Ola, Electric definitely helps the core ride-hailing business also. I think the way to... So founders will always have unlimited ambition. So we have discussed Microsoft, right? Microsoft. So a lot of these companies, you either have the Alphabet and the Google and the Microsofts, then you have the Elon Musk model. I think what we are talking about here is a little bit more Elon Muskish kind of digital industrialist. But everybody has had different cuts at it, right? So Apple, clear and simple, clean, never even done an acquisition. Everything is being built in-house, but generally surrounding one consumer, right? So the thread that binds is the one consumer. You look at Google, when they were doing their moonshot projects, that's when they became Alphabet. And they said, Google idhar, moonshot idhar. So they tried within the same holding company structure because they had control. Elon Musk wants five different companies. So I don't think there is an easy answer. I think you can, what Off Business Oxiso did, I think wherever either you are surrounding the same customer or there is significant overlap, it's probably better off to be within the same company. You may spin off later, but I think it's better to have, and I know we were going to talk about examples later, but speaking of examples here, even outside our portfolio, if you look at FirstCry, ExpressBees, GlobalBees, I think ExpressBees FirstCry was clearly, so Supam has done a fantastic job. He's clearly a digital industrialist, right? So FirstCry, I think, helped them incubate ExpressBees because they needed all the logistics. Logistics may have been broken or something like
and
that.
And lowest cost.
And lowest cost. Lowest cost, very importantly. And then there's GlobalBees because they know branding and there's that. So completely different businesses, right? Versus if you look at Off Business Oxygo, they were actually at one point highly overlapping. Okay. So within the same. And so you spin it out later, maybe. Bhavish is on record talking about now, thinking about AI and compute and all of that. Now, actually, if you look at it, who would be big users of some of that? Ola and Ola Electric and Swiggy and Zomato and all of that. So I do think that's where the nuance lies. There is no single playbook. But I do think thinking about it would help to say, am I surrounding the same customer? Is there a lot of overlap? If there's a lot of overlap, then do it internally first. And it's actually a sequencing thing. And what are you ultimately trying to do? You are ultimately trying to accelerate the 0 to 10 journey. You're basically trying to bypass the 0 to 1, right? And lately, by the way, on a slight digression, we meet founders who are coming with GTM, which is to acquire existing companies. They're like, we just don't want to go through that PMF journey, right? So that's kind of with the experienced founders what you're trying to do here with the new businesses.
Interesting. So we've covered why, we've covered when, we've covered under what conditions and guardrails, and in now in what structure. This sounds awesome. So I guess what is the con from an investor side at all? Because otherwise there's...
I think, look, it has to be, first of all, like I said before, don't do it is the right starting point. Really think about, have I earned my right to this? Do I have a business that's a cash flow generation? I've figured out whatever. And do I want the headache? And for if you meet all the criteria that we mentioned before, then do it the right way, right? This is not a value capture mechanism. This is a value creation mechanism. That founders are saying there's that 2 trillion out there. Why should I, what we discussed before, why should I let other people get it? Then apply all these filters, whether it's FMF, whether it is your right to win, right to play, and then do it right. So the way Oxygo did it, the way I believe a bunch of them have happened, all existing investors are treated pari passu. You go...
Give them the right to invest?
First you replicate the exact shareholding, right? Yes, there may be a slight top up for the management team separate, but you're not trying to capture more value for yourself. You are just trying to create a lot more value for everybody, right? And that is a very important difference in the framework. And then after that, it's like any other company. All the investors have a right to, but an investor should not be feeling that my value is being transferred somewhere else. So I think doing it right is what results in value accretion.
Yeah, and I think we didn't call out Flipkart and PhonePe and eCart as well, but yeah. You know, even they've clearly done the same thing, right?
Like, but you know, this was what I was thinking. Like, if you look at Ola Electric, Ola, now Ola may have a small ownership in that, but rumor is Ola Electric is 6, 7, 8 billion, whatever it is, right? That's hundreds of millions of payoff for Ola. Now, Ola shareholders anyway have separate in Electric. Flipkart, we just saw what, $750 million payoff for PhonePe. I mean, these are massive numbers. So, like I said, if, and we didn't even take Flipkart example, but that's, you know, one of the largest examples. I just think if it's done right, it's so exciting. But it just needs to be done within the right guardrails, because we have seen it benefit employees. It benefits the parent company. It benefits the other shareholders, right? So,
awesome. Very excited. And hopefully some of the founders who are listening in, do drop us a note if there are interesting ideas that you're thinking about.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you.